This is Pittsburgh Explainer from 90.5 WESA. Every week, we help you catch up on the headlines from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, January 8th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. I sat and stared at a blank page for a long time, trying to figure out just what to say on this week's show. Words fail in times like these, so I'll just stick to the facts. Far-right extremists who support President Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday. It was an effort to disrupt the congressional process of certifying Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as president and vice president-elect. The Senate chamber was breached as lawmakers and staffers hid in secret locations. Among the insurrectionists, at least four people died, more than 50 were arrested, while others were free to leave. Afterwards, Congress went back to work. And despite objections from Republicans, Pennsylvania's 20 electoral votes were awarded to Biden and Harris. Here to discuss what this week's events say about Pennsylvania politics and our place in U.S. politics is WESA's government and accountability editor Chris Potter and Katie Meyer. She reports on politics for WHYY in Philadelphia. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Several Pennsylvania Republicans opted to continue with their objections to the Electoral College vote, even after the violence and mayhem that took place on Wednesday. Who were those folks? And was there anyone who decided to rescind their objection?
So, yeah, no, there were really no surprises as far as Pennsylvania's congressional delegation came in. We expected 8 of the 9 House Republicans to file objections to Pennsylvania's results, and they all did that. So it was every Republican in Pennsylvania's House delegation except for Brian Fitzpatrick, who has a moderate district in southeastern Pennsylvania. We also, you know, as expected, saw a pretty robust objection to, overturning the certification from Pat Toomey, Pennsylvania's Republican senator, who, it should be noted, is not running for re-election. So, yeah, not a lot of surprises there.
I mean, I agree with Katie that there were no real surprises and certainly no softening of a position by any of the Republicans who we expected to vote no. You did see that in some other states. Some other representatives did say, Kelly Loeffler, the best known example on the Senate side, who had just lost her special election in Georgia, had said late in the game, yeah, I will vote with the president, and decided not to, inciting the violence there as a reason why. We did not see that in Pennsylvania. About the only sign we might have seen is the fact that, as far as I could tell from what I've watched, Guy Reschenthaler, a representative from outside of Pittsburgh, who has generally championed Mr. Trump's cause, was the only member of the delegation who voted to toss out the state's results, who did not give a floor speech last night. I found that notable because it's not like Mr. Reschenthaler to pass up a chance to do something like that. And, you know, one wonders whether, you know, what kind of calculation might have gone into that decision. But other than that, Katie's quite right. It was almost as if from the Republican side, other than sort of a pro forma thing at the beginning of their remarks, I stand before you with a heavy heart kind of thing after this disturbance, this insurrection earlier today. I stand before you with a heavy heart, but da-da-da-da-da, and they just lodged all the same objections I suspect that they would have made regardless, even if that stuff hadn't happened.
There was this moment early Thursday morning when Democratic Representative Connor Lamb was speaking and basically laying blame on some of his Republican colleagues for the attack on the Capitol. And I'll say he wasn't the only Democrat who did that. And a fight nearly broke out. Here's some of what he was saying.
We know that attack today, it didn't materialize out of nowhere. It was inspired by lies, the same lies that you're hearing in this room tonight. And the members who are repeating those lies should be ashamed of themselves. Their constituents should be ashamed of them.
And then a few minutes later, Republican Morgan Griffiths of Virginia jumped in.
Point of order, the gentleman said that there were lies on this floor here today, looking over this direction. I ask that those words be taken down. We may have a disagreement on matters, but
this man is not timely.
An hour or so earlier, I was watching NBC and I heard Chuck Todd say he believes Wednesday's attack could have a balming effect on Congress, that it may inspire lawmakers to work together more than they would otherwise. But this moment between Lamb and Griffiths seems to suggest otherwise. I mean, what are your thoughts on whether Congress will continue to remain so bitterly divided moving into the next session?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to have a bombing effect. I mean, I think as Chris said a minute ago, we did see Republicans, people, you know, all across the political spectrum, starting their remarks with, you know, I condemn all this violence. This is not what we stand for. That didn't want this to happen. But I do think at the core of what they are saying, their arguments have not changed. We still have a fully, you know, divergent, you know, conception of what is true about this election. And you saw arguments that, frankly, were just totally circular. I'm thinking of somebody like Ted Cruz, who essentially argued that we need to contest the results of this election because a lot of people believe that this election was fraudulent because we've been contesting the results of this election. And so I think, you know, when you get to that point, and again, when you have so many members who are still, again, not changing their rhetoric on this, they still believe, you know, without evidence that the election was somehow, you know, should have been overturned or that the result should have been different. I just, you know, there's really no common ground here.
I'll be as optimistic I can and say the jury is out on what the long-term effects will be. I mean, what you've already sort of heard, even from Republicans who have condemned what happened yesterday, is some both-sidism. You know, I was opposed to the Black Lives Matter protest this past summer, and similarly, I am opposed to this. Even though, of course, Donald Trump himself identified him with the cause as it was unfolding, right? I mean, he was the one who was kind of goading this thing on himself and talking about walking down there with him at one point.
I thought it was very interesting that he said, "I'll be right there with you," and he was not. I mean, that was never, the Secret Service was never going to let him walk with, you know, 1,000 protesters to the Capitol, right? Like, that was never going to happen.
Well, and I think if the history of the past 4 years stand to anything, it's for the proposition that Donald Trump, when he says he's going to be there with you, is often not there with you. Many a Republican office holder, including Mike Pence within the past 24 hours, can attest to that. In a variety of ways, the history has been when there is an outrage like this to the sort of to the body politic, to our sense of community in this country, people sort of lay low for a little bit, and they don't say anything, and they kind of offer these sort of, you know, blanket statements of regret and whatever, and then conspiracy theories start percolating up on the right, and a little bit of time passes, and people forget, and they just move on, and then the next thing you know, I won't be surprised if a month or two from now, you have Republican office holders talking about how, you know, for all we know, it was it was these left-wing type agitators who are responsible for all of this. Or they'll say things like, well, you know, had it been the left-wing agitators, they would have been busting up statues and not just poking a few holes in windows or whatever. My point here is just that what I have seen for the past several years in this Trump era has been an attempt to sort of minimize the significance of these things, to sort of say, well, we don't really mean it. We should take this stuff not, you know, seriously, but not literally. You know, they're trolling, the president's joking, da 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 da. That there are all these attempts to sort of temporize and to play down the significance of it. And I mean, they got to show us, right, that this is not what that is. And I think before we get to that point, I don't know. And let's remember, there are a lot of people out there. I don't know how many. There are a lot of people out there who are now absolutely assured, because of what has happened in the past 2 months, they will not accept Joe Biden as their legitimate president. They will not believe he was legitimately elected. And they're going to be carrying that around. And what they do with that attitude remains to be seen. But it's something we're going to have to deal with long after Donald Trump leaves the White House.
Republican Senator Pat Toomey went point by point through the substance of his colleagues' objections to the Pennsylvania vote, basically saying they don't have a case. But what was really striking to me was how he ended his statement. Let's hear that now.
Joe Biden won the election. That's not what I had hoped for, but that's what happened. It was an honest victory, with the usual minor irregularities that occur in most elections. We witnessed today the damage that can result when men in power and responsibility refuse to acknowledge the truth. We saw bloodshed because a demagogue chose to spread falsehoods and sow distrust of his own fellow Americans. Let's not abet such deception. Let's reject this motion.
So at first he says he had hoped for Trump to win, but then he calls Trump a demagogue who sows distrust and basically says he has blood on his hands from this woman who died on Wednesday. I should note, four people died on Wednesday One was shot and three due to other medical emergencies. Talking about who Pat Toomey is now that he's not running for re-election, how do we square those two statements that he made?
Well, I mean, I think it's been really hard to square Pat Toomey's views on Trump for the entirety of his term. I mean, I always go back to the night of the election in 2016 when Pat Toomey had not supported Trump, really, and would not say if he was voting for him. And then at like 7:30, right before the polls closed, he was like, by the way, I voted for Trump. And not to make light of what I'm sure was a difficult decision for Pat Toomey, but like, I think he has always wanted to distance himself from the president, but he has not done so because I believe it would have been politically difficult for him to do that. And certainly I don't think Pat Toomey always had in his head that he wasn't going to run for re-election. So listen, I think he has been trying to walk as fine a line as he could to not alienate Trump and Trump's supporters, but also not act like he agrees with them too much. You know, Pat Toomey wants to be able to go point by point and make a lot of careful arguments that are based, for the most part, in fact. And so, that's how I interpret how he has reacted here. And obviously, he has, again, said he's not running for re-election. There was just a very, very extreme event that happened. And I think he took that moment to, you know, say something that maybe he wanted to say for a long time. But regardless, he has not said it before now.
Chris, can you talk a little bit about what this statement from Toomey, who, again, not seeking re-election, no real like political consequence for him, no matter what he says. What does this say about how Republicans have sort of twisted themselves in knots, have, you know, over the last 4 years gone against traditional Republican policies in order to stay in line with Trump? What happens now that Trump is not the leader of the party?
Yeah, I mean, this is that's a great question about sort of how they move forward. I mean, I think to pick up something Katie says, Toomey, more than most other Republicans in Washington, D.C., has stuck to some of his principles as a conservative kind of free market Republican. He has bucked Trump on issues, on trade issues and things like that. He has been willing to be more critical, you know, of Russia and on some of the foreign policy issues where there are differences. But there is a Faustian bargain at work here for a lot of these guys. You know, they made a trade-off. We'll get our judges, our Federalist Society approved judges, onto the bench if Donald Trump is there. And I'm sure one of the ways in which they're kind of living with themselves is saying, look, some of Trump's own appointees in Pennsylvania and elsewhere rejected the Trump campaign's efforts to overturn election results. So that it's not nothing for them. But you kind of think back to the times where I can recall a time when Pat Toomey was sitting at a table with Donald Trump talking about gun violence. And Senator Toomey is one of the few Republicans who's tried to do anything on that issue. And you could argue about how seriously he's pushed it, but he's tried to do something. And Donald Trump said, you're afraid of the NRA. And of course, what subsequent events have proved is that if anybody's afraid of the NRA, it was Donald Trump himself. So I don't doubt that there has been for Mr. Toomey a very serious, longstanding thing that he has had to keep bottled up inside himself, a resentment of this guy who I think it's pretty clear he doesn't like on a personal level, and probably never has. He, of course, is out of the picture, but I do think there is this broader issue of where this party goes now. And I mean, this is the party of Trump. Those folks who were at the Capitol on Wednesday, they weren't hanging American flags. They weren't hanging the GOP flag. They were hanging the flag of Donald Trump on that building. And when Trump isn't in the White House, I do not at this point know exactly what this party stands for. I think we're going to hear a lot about deficits. Again, it'll be in vogue for Republicans to be concerned about deficit spending when a Democrat is the one talking about how to use the money. But beyond that, I think, and this is why, to your earlier question, I am concerned about sort of whether there's a healing process at work, because what the Republicans have proven themselves to be is very, very successful at being the party in opposition. When it comes to actual governing, I am not really sure what their agenda for governing would be, and they don't have to worry about it for 2 years because they have lost every branch of the federal government under the Trump administration's influence.
Katie, where do you see the GOP and specifically Pennsylvania's delegation going from here?
They are going to kind of grope around and try to figure out what they stand for now. I mean, I'm trying to get a bunch of Republican lawmakers on the phone to ask them basically that question. But listen, so what we do know and what we do have from them is that right before all of this happened, you know, the Senate, the Pennsylvania Senate, which has always held itself up as being the more, you know, circumspect, less willing to say crazy stuff, frankly, branch of Pennsylvania state government, Senate leaders signed on to a letter urging Pennsylvania's congressional delegation to overturn the election results. I haven't been able to get in touch with everybody who signed that letter. Not every GOP senator in Pennsylvania's state house and Senate did, but leadership signed on. Jake Corman, Kim Ward, the top senators signed on to this thing. I haven't heard very many Republican Senate leaders saying anything about Doug Mastriano, who is a Pennsylvania senator and who was down at the protest, basically spreading and believing the exact same claims that I think many of these people who rushed the Capitol believe. You know, Mastriano did release a statement saying specifically that he wasn't inside, that he didn't, you know, do anything violent, that he was upset to see that that had happened, but he was there. And I think you cannot claim that Mastriano hasn't been spreading baseless theories about what happened in this election. I think he's been pretty far out there, and he's not the only member of the delegation. So again, I have not heard anything from Republican leaders about that. I feel like that's something that we need them to weigh in on, and I don't know if they will.
Yeah, it just it, for our Western Pennsylvania audience who may not be as familiar with Senator Mastriano, he is this is a name you're going to hear again because he's been talked about as a potential GOP candidate for governor in 2022. He's also the guy who hosted that I guess you call it a hearing where Republicans had Rudy Giuliani come in and just talk about the election, you know, the kind of conspiracy theory that has animated so many of the complaints that we've heard. So this is not just some rando, you know, state legislator from some backwater or whatever. This is a guy who it is a rising figure within his party down there at this event where all of this stuff happened.
So speaking of the state legislature, the GOP-controlled Senate basically refused to seat Democrat Jim Brewster, who defeated Republican Nicole Zicarelli to represent voters in the eastern suburbs of Allegheny County and parts of Westmoreland County. What's the latest on that, and what's the takeaway for where state politics stand?
So the latest on that is lawyers in that case are filing briefs as they've done before. This is before federal district court judge Nicholas Ranjan, who has handled this case for a while now and has handled some other election related matters, a Trump appointee. But again, one who, as we were sort of saying before, has ruled against the Republican position there. And the arguments are very similar, by the way, to the arguments that have proceeded with respect to the presidential thing. I mean, a big part of Ms. Zicarelli's case is Allegheny County counted ballots where they were filed on time. They were time stamped when they arrived. They all arrived by election day. But the voters that mailed them in did not manually themselves write the date on the outside of the envelope, which is a requirement under the law. That was adjudicated, went all the way to the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court said, no, actually, you don't have to. These votes should be counted. The dates are not essential. There's every reason to believe they're valid. There's no reason to believe they're fraudulent. Allegheny County counted those. Westmoreland County did not. And the Zicarelli campaign is saying that's unequal treatment of voters in those two places. That's actually very similar to Trump campaign arguments that some voters in Pennsylvania were allowed to cure their ballots, to go back and fix them because there were minor deficiencies and get their votes counted while voters in other counties weren't. And what judges have said in that case is, yeah, that's unfair, but your argument is with the counties that didn't let you do that. Not with the ones that did. You don't sort of define this stuff down and take the worst, most restrictive approach to voting. You try to raise everybody up rather than put them down. So it's kind of a similar sort of argument. I think the bigger question here, though, is whichever way the judge rules here, somebody's going to be appealing it. And what's not clear to me is when this ever ends, when somebody finally does get seated there. And, you know, the Democratic position was, look, this Mr. Brewster, the incumbent, has been certified, his votes have been upheld. Let's put him in there, and down the road, if a court says, no, this he has to come out, then you can yank him. It's happened before. There is a precedent for that where the Senate has expelled a member because of a court determination. So let's do it that way. So at least the 45th district has voters in it. And the Republicans have said, nope, we want to do this right, not fast. That's what Leader Corman said. And, you know, it was sort of a, when Mr. Corman said we're not seating him, it was sort of, we need time to figure this out. I don't know how much time that entails. I don't actually know when the moment is where we decide who the senator from the 45th district is going to be. But this in itself is kind of a kind of chronic crisis here that may continue, as far as I know, for the indefinite future.
The question here is, when does this end? Yes, of course, you can debate things for a very long time. I think there are diminishing returns after a specific amount of time or after a long enough period of time. And I also think, as we've seen, can have a destabilizing effect when we do not have an accepted consensus on the outcome of an election for a, again, significant period of time.
Thanks to you both for being on the show this week.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, WESA.FM, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.